This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening, you're with Uma and Ezra, and this evening we're going to be talking about Mensa. Now, of course, Mensa is a society that aims to identify and foster human intelligence for the benefit of humanity. Today, there are over 120,000 Mensans in 100 countries throughout the world, with active Mensa organizations in more than 40 countries on every continent except Antarctica. Now, its Malaysian chapter celebrated their 30th anniversary about a couple years ago. Today, we speak to the chairman of Mensa Malaysia to find out more about the society and how it's fostering human intelligence amongst Malaysians. Jairam, welcome to the show. Thank you for being with us. And I guess, I mean, it's remarkable, isn't it, that, you know, Malaysia is celebrating its 30th anniversary. And I guess how big is this community and what has happened in that time?
Thank you for inviting me to BFM. Malaysian Mensa, yes, was formed more than 30 years. And it's been a steady journey with, so far, I think about 7,000 people who have joined. But of course, over the years, they have gone on to other things. And we are quite, I'm quite happy with the directions that the current Mensa NATCOM is taking.
So how many Malaysian Mensans are there?
Paid-up members, that's an important distinction. Those who don't pay up are not considered members of our society. We have now in the region of 700 to 800.
Wow, that's a fair number.
Now, for listeners who may not be familiar with Mensa, I mean, I think a lot of people think of Mensa. They think a lot of smart, intelligent, genius-type people.
Maybe you can think about their test, right?
The Mensa test. Maybe you can break down for some of our listeners, what exactly does it mean to be a Mensa member?
Okay, Mensa is a high IQ society, and their cutoff is, they will accept any member who has set a recognized test and made the cut at the 98th percentile. In layman's terms, it means you're in the top 2% of the population. The current test that we have employed over the years is the Raven's Advanced Matrices. It is a culture-free test. No English or language power required, except to listen and understand the instructions given by the testing officer, and no mathematics. Purely based on pictures and graphics, you are given 8 possible answers for any single question, and you choose the one that you think fits the patterns. So the test is international, one of the rare standardized tests which the world recognizes. And that has some bearing as to why I would like to push that test to be done by appropriate segments of the population.
So what does this test aim to test? What are we testing? What are we looking for when we give someone this test?
For people who can solve problems fast, who have deductive capability. One of my favorite definitions of intelligence is simply this, something that you have to use when you don't know what the next step is going to be. Then you have, in any problem-solving exercise or any situation where you really don't know what to do, that's when you have to employ your intelligence. So the IQ test is one that actually can show and bring to the fore your capability to deduce from seemingly random patterns something which has a conclusion or some answer possible in that sequence.
So, and thus the removal of language mathematics. So it's kind of testing a priori knowledge, right? So,
I wouldn't want to say it tests it tests a particular kind of intelligence.
Okay.
So we don't want to be so arrogant to say that that if you're not done well,
therefore
you lack general intelligence. No. But a particular kind of intelligence, which in the modern world is quite important. So, but it doesn't mean that the reverse is true. You know. So.
We're going to find out a little bit more about this particular type of intelligence. In the studio with us is Jairam Menon, Malaysia Mensa Chairman. We'll be right back after this on BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
Good evening. You're with Uma and Ezra. In the studio with us is Jairam Menon. We're speaking with the Malaysia Mensa Chairman. And we're speaking about, the particular type of tests and the intelligence that is required to do this, or at least what we are trying to get out of it. So, you know, you have a lot of these analytical, critical thinking aspects of the test. And, of course, the range of Mensa, you know, participants or members, I mean, they can be as young as, I mean, I was reading 30 years old, and it goes, there's a quite a range of, you know, folks who are involved in Mensa, aren't they?
Yes. But we are only officially allowed to test folks from the age of 14 onwards. Mm-hmm. Simply meaning that intelligence before that has not crystallized, and therefore it would not be reflect correctly. So 14 is the age that we prefer. And I would like to encourage all students to take this test at that age.
So before we get into the particular kind of intelligence it tests, and I guess its usefulness to the world, I'm curious to know the crafting of this test, because like you said, it has to be universal because culture doesn't play a part. Somebody in Africa should be able to do it as well as someone in Singapore, Malaysia, you know, wherever. So talk to us about the crafting of this test. How does that happen?
Wow, that's a toughie. But
is there like a committee?
No, there are 200 or so such tests recognized by Mensa International. In Malaysia, however, we only follow, we only use a Raven's Advanced Matrices because we feel comfortable with that, and there's so much of data on that. Its validity, mm-hmm, over the 70 years it has been used in all kinds of cultures, and it's quite extraordinary that to the extent to which intelligence can be identified using that, even for students in the most obscure and agricultural areas in the world. So the crafting of that test by Professor Raven is a story by itself, but essentially it is a series of pictures, 8 pictures, in a matrix of 3x3, with the last one being empty, and from which you must choose from the 8 possible answers, mm-hmm, what fits in there best. So it's actually a scanning of the patterns horizontally, vertically, and any other way, such that it you need to penetrate what the logic of that pattern is. So it's a visual. You need your eyes, definitely. But you need a mind which can work reasonably fast, because this particular test, there are 36 questions in 40 minutes.
Wow.
Mm. So if you don't get it, you move on to the next, and maybe you can come back to it. I think it proved its validity over the years.
And so are we saying that there is some correlation, or that the correlation between intelligence and academic knowledge or just general knowledge, they're not mutually exclusive?
Yeah. If you do well in IQ test, there is a very high correlation with certain aspects of general intelligence. Yes, that definitely is. So that is why it is valid across cultures and age groups. However, in doing the test, your age comes into the picture, because a raw score is the first step, after which there is some manipulation with the age, and therefore you will get your final IQ score based on your age.
So talk to us about the kind of intelligence you seek to test, because it's a general conception surrounding Mensa, I guess. It's, oh, you know, high IQ people. It means if you're not Mensa, oh, you're not as clever as everyone else, right? Mm. Or you're not as clever as those guys. So it seems like a judgment almost. But of course, that's not what you're saying. I mean, it's just a very particular intelligence that is possessed by maybe a tiny segment of society. So what is that particular intelligence?
And also, what is the value to that?
And what is the value, of course?
Okay. It tests capability to deduce from data which seems random. Therefore, you're making use of your cognitive capabilities, making use of your deductive capabilities to reach the answer. Hence, it is a method by which we can measure the problem-solving capability of people. That's the simplest way I can describe it. So it's not grandiose in its conclusion by saying you're not good for anything else if you are not good in this particular test. No. As you know, the study of intelligence has grown over the years, and the levels at which it can be measured and researched are always improving. So there might be more sophisticated tests, but we choose this one because it's economically it's very cheap. It's ringgit 50. So whereas any other sophisticated test by psychologists is very expensive. So at one go, especially parents who do not know the capability of the children, especially people who have attention deficit disorder or hyperactive children, it's good to rule out other things by sitting for this test to see whether they have the wherewithal to be able to go into professions which require a significant amount of problem solving. So it's useful in the sense that if you are good at, if you've done well at the IQ test, you probably will do well in those areas where problem solving or intensive problem solving is required.
It's so critical as well.
The NASA.
We're going to continue our conversation with the Malaysia Mensa Chairman, Jeremy Menon. It's the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Banish fraudulent maneuvers, BFM 89.9.
Good evening, you're with Uma and Ezra. This evening we're speaking to Jairam Menon, Malaysia Mensa Chairman. We've been speaking about how the intelligence of someone and how it benefits the community, and how these tests actually sort of try to look at problem-solving patterns and how people can, community at large can benefit from it. When it comes to, I guess, the Malaysian chapter, I think a huge topic of conversation has been really the Malaysian education system. And as a result, has there been some sort of observation that you've made with perhaps a number of Mensa members here in Malaysia vis-a-vis our education system in relation to other developing or developed countries? Or is there no correlation at all, perhaps? I don't know.
So when I became chairman, one of the ambitions which I had was to use this test and apply it in schools to identify students who otherwise will never be identified because they are not doing well academically. Mm. This is a very important issue. If you are urban, the chance, if you are in an urban area, the chances are your parents are knowledgeable and will have the means to make sure that you are given extra tuition, extra facilities to catch up, to do well in your exams, because it matters a tremendous amount for your future if you do well in academia. However, a great percentage of students in the rural areas, in urban poor areas where both parents are working and do not have the financial means to look after you in any other way, these students might not get that additional benefit of a student who has parents who are knowledgeable about such stuff.
And also the benefit of the doubt, because sometimes they just get written off as being...
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the chances are, if they don't do well academically, not a single A, for example, in SPM, you're considered stupid.
A lost cause.
Both by teachers and your parents. So
And suddenly they're off to the arts stream of...
not necessarily.
Not even there sometimes.
But the tragedy is they might not see themselves as of any value. And the tragedy is they will... look and aim for something which is low. They will not aim high.
Or not reflective of their true potential.
True potential. If they had done this test, and I have anecdotal evidence, if they had done this test, at least I am so quite confident that 15 to 20% of those written off would have qualified. And therefore... imagine the feeling of that person, of such students. Wow, here is an international test which recognizes my merit and gives me the third-party proof that it is not my imagination or or a fiction, that I am in the top percentile, and therefore... it is incumbent upon me to try and aim for something better.
Do you
because
have
I have these capabilities.
Do you have an example of one of these personal anecdotes?
Yes. I was giving a talk at one of those... I do give talks at schools to generate interest in testing the students. But we need sponsors because we don't want students to pay 50 ringgit. So we need this. Anyway, when I was... giving the purpose of such things, a student stood up and he had said, he supported me in the sense that, yes, when he finished his SPM many years back, he didn't get a single A, but he sat this test and he qualified.
Fantastic.
And just based on that, he applied to the US universities and got a scholarship in engineering. So, it was an eye-opener that this is a powerful document. This is a powerful test. It gives recognition and university would recognize it just like that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, of course, because even in engineering, it's analytics, it's logic, it's problem-solving more than anything else, right? And our school system tests something completely different.
It tests many, many things. And unfortunately, if a student doesn't like... a lot of subject, but likes only one or two, he will do reasonably well in that, and he will ignore all the rest. But the academic paper will tell him he's of that level, you see. Whereas this test would push aside all those fact-based stuff and get to the gist of how good the person is at problem-solving.
You've been speaking about, I guess, the often sort of anecdote about how somebody who may not be succeeding so much in schools or university, who in fact has actually an intelligence or an intellectual gift that hasn't been recognized and the true potential of what that could mean for that person.
Yeah, we've seen it enough in movies.
That's right.
Good Will Hunting, Finding Forrester. Lots of these movies try to show these lost causes, but actually they're secret geniuses, right?
Yep. But I wouldn't be so ambitious as to that we can recognize genius, okay? But we can recognize people with high capability in problem solving. And to do that at that age, at 14, if we could cover from a pilot program, the urban schools, the rural schools, Mensa Malaysia are looking for sponsors to do such a thing, so that when we can recognize such a huge number of gifted students, then I think aid will come forth in way of even the most minimal kind of help to go to the next step. So otherwise, I'm afraid having only one kind of criteria, the academic criteria, would be not good for a country like ours with a huge number of rural students, huge number of urban poor students who will never get a chance otherwise.
So, Jerome, tell me, is there an average percentage of a population of a country that does well at Mensa, or does it differ? Because obviously it should be completely independent of culture, race, religion, everything. So have you found in your studies, I mean, would it always be, say, 5% of the population that qualify?
Yeah, our criteria is 2%.
Okay.
So automatically...
So it's based entirely within the subjectivity of that country, lah.
Yes, yeah. But the cutoff point will always be such that we get the top 2%.
Okay.
So imagine if there was a population of, let's say, 1 million, then 2% would be about 20,000.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, 20,000. So, but that's not the number of people we're getting. So which means that people who join Mensa, even after sitting the test and qualify, are people who are looking for other things too. Social... reasons or reasons to say that I belong to an exclusive club and things like that. That is fine, and we don't stop such people. But our aim now to satisfy that important purpose for Mensa, the identification of intelligence, which academia is not quite doing, this gives justification to our efforts in wanting to do this test for the huge number of students out there who are just not into academia.
Jerome, you know, what I'm really sort of enjoying here is that we're hearing how, you know, with this test, you know, we can identify intelligence in some sort of objective manner. And so now you have this wonderful talent pool, not just in Malaysia, but right across the world. And the main thing that we're looking at is to look at problem solving. And by gosh, the world has a lot of problems. but has there been some sort of collective effort in trying to tackle some of the world's biggest problems when, you know, the Mensa society gets together and say, hey, you know what, maybe we need to sort out healthcare in Africa and maybe we can knock it out of the park in the next half an hour. I mean, do you guys have a forum? Do you guys meet up every 2 weeks? What's going on?
Okay. It doesn't work quite that way.
Oh, I see. I see. Because yeah. You see, I don't know what's happening with the top 2%. I'm just hanging out in the mid-50s.
Yeah, that's right. So the top 2% also want to enjoy each other's company and so forth.
Okay.
So we just like the rest of the folks. But some of us, we recognize that, yes. If you are recognized as a top two, it's obligatory upon you to make a difference. So here is the thing that makes the difference between a genius and somebody who is merely gifted. Genius will work extremely hard and concentrate on the problem over hours and days and weeks and months to finally get the solution. So that requires another kind of characteristic, which IQ by itself does not measure. We have been valid for so long simply because our field is narrow, deductive capability. But what makes success in the world of people who have solved immense problems is something else. It's resourcefulness, tenacity, and things like that. So, yeah. Just IQ alone is not enough to penetrate the world's difficult problems.
So, Jerome, I'm curious, does you said you start testing at about 40, and I'm always curious to know whether age plays a factor. Does it, because it's supposed to be such an independent and non-influential test, as in no outside influences. Someone who's testing at 14, is it different from the same person testing at 28?
Yes.
I mean, does that change? Do we become dumber as we go older?
Okay. There is a nice...
it's a bell curve?
Okay. It's a part of a curve.
Okay.
In which, if you're at 14, you can make more mistakes in the test and still score at the cutoff point.
Right.
Whereas if you just go 2 years more, and then another 2 years, then you can't make that number of mistakes. And after a while, at a more advanced age, you can still make the mistakes and still be okay for reaching the cutoff point. Because at 2%, we try to validate for every age group.
Right, okay.
So this exercise of renorming, we have to do it every few years to make sure that we are following that criteria.
You know, what I'm enjoying is that as long as there's more room to make mistakes, that's where I sit most comfortable at. So, Jairo Menon, thank you very much for joining us in the studio. We've been speaking to the Malaysia Mensa chairman. To find out more about Malaysian Mensa, head over to www.mensa.my. Folks, it's the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.